You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Over the last 52 weeks, the stock price of Starbucks has risen from a low of $22 to $38 per share. It's the result of a very careful strategy by the chairman, president, and CEO of Starbucks, Howard Schultz. In 2008, 8 years after Mr. Schultz had stepped down from control of daily operations, he returned during the recession to steer the company back to profitability. In a new book called Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul, he tells the story of his decision to return and how he is continuing to transform the company while keeping it profitable and sustaining its growth. It's written with the help of Joanne Gordon, published by Rodale, and I'm very pleased that it brings Howard Schultz to our show today. Hello.
Thank you.
When you stepped down from daily operations in 2000, did you see it as a permanent move, or were you just taking an indefinite sabbatical?
I thought it was permanent at the time. I certainly had no intention of coming back. The company was in great hands, but, you know, the recession came and the financial crisis, and Starbucks, like many other companies, was facing a very, very tough road.
Well, you're young. You did remain chairman of the board, but were you planning to do other things?
I was doing some other things. I was still somewhat active in the company as the chairman, but I had other interests. But when the financial crisis came and some self-induced mistakes that I thought we made as a company, I was compelled to come back. Really because of my love of the company and my responsibility that goes with it.
Kind of Steve Jobs thing?
Well,
the same reason he returned to Apple?
Maybe in a sense, yes.
Although the situation there was more dire and the turnaround there was even more dramatic.
Well, I think Steve's done an extraordinary job. For us, the difference between what Apple went through and Starbucks is we had our own issues, but the financial crisis I think was the perfect storm. So we were navigating not only our own issues, but the fact that the recession produced such dire consequences for the consumer.
So you were away. I assume you would stop into a Starbucks store now and then to see how things were going. What did you think of how the company was doing without you?
For many years, the company was on this magical carpet ride where everything we did worked out. But sometimes the stock price or profitability can somehow camouflage the underpinnings of what's really going on. And I thought there was a time when the road we were headed down was more about growth and profitability than it was the customer experience.
Well, when you joined Starbucks, there were only 4 stores, and now there are over 17,000.
Correct.
And in some areas of New York, it feels like they're a block apart. In fact, in the theater district, they are a block apart. And I always wondered whether they're competing with each other.
Well, if they're a block apart, those stores are very profitable. The irony of it, I can't tell you how many friends in New York complain to me they can't find a Starbucks when they want it. So
I don't know where they're looking for them on the river.
No, I don't know. But I think the issue is, and I write about this a fair amount in the book, it's not just about growth and it's not about profitability. What it really is about is the original business proposition of Starbucks was trying to achieve the balance between profitability and a social conscience. And what I wanted to make sure we did is as we transformed the company during the recession, that we didn't leave our people behind.
Well, you were losing that small coffee house flavor, weren't you?
Well, I think, companies can get big and stay small and maintain their intimacy with their customers and our people. And that was something I think we've been very good at. A good example of that is, Starbucks was the first company in America to provide health care to all of its employees, including part-timers. And that's a benefit that has stuck with us now for over 20 years. And so you can get big and succeed and still do some very good things, not the least of which is great things for your people.
Were you ever under pressure from your board of directors to remove the $250 million a year it costs to insure your employees?
That's an interesting question. Not from the board. I had received a call from an institutional shareholder during the recession who was quite interested in me looking at healthcare because many companies at the time during the recession were either cutting or certainly refining the program. And his case to me was, you got great cover now, No one's going to complain. Everyone's doing it. And what I said to him was that the very essence of the foundation and values of the company, the fabric of the company, was linked to this benefit, and we were not going to do that.
Also paying some people above the wage that sure. you might expect.
Yeah.
You offer stock participation programs. And yet Starbucks is often the focus of anti-corporate hostility. Why do you think that is?
I think if you look at America and you look at most companies that have gotten big, they haven't stayed great. And there's a high level of cynicism about corporate America today. And I think sometimes we get put in that basket. But the truth of the matter is millions of people come to Starbucks every day, not only because of the quality of the coffee, but in many ways because of the trust they have about the values of the company. And I think great companies can get big and stay small. And I think we've demonstrated that. And the transformation of the company was an opportunity to, in a sense, make a bigger deposit in the reservoir of that trust.
But in offering those kinds of benefits, weren't you, in a way, preventing your workers from feeling that they had to unionize?
Well, I think, Starbucks is not an anti-union company. We're not a union-based business. It's a free country. People can do what they want. But the truth of the matter is that the benefits are so compelling and the attrition rate is so low that people have not had any reason to join a union because the company has done so good by them.
The attrition rate is low? Most employees just work for a short time and then move on?
In the retail or restaurant industry today, the attrition rate is over 300%. We are significantly lower than that. And interestingly enough, more people have applied to Starbucks over the last 12 months than any other time in our history, primarily because of the health care benefit, because their spouse or partner had lost health care.
Will President Obama's health care plan alter your approach to offering health care? Do you think it'll help you?
We've been a supporter of the president's plan, especially given the fact that millions of America did not have health insurance. I think we have to wait and see how the exchanges are going to be put in place. But we are a supporter of the plan, and I think the end result will be positive for Starbucks.
My guest is Howard Schultz. He's written a book called Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul. The book is published by Rodale. One decision you made when you returned, which cost the company several million dollars, was to close many of the Starbucks stores for a day of retraining. Were things really that drastic?
Well, I think that's the question that you're asking is one of degree. I felt very strongly that the quality of the things that we were doing in 2008 were not as good as they was in the past. And the statement I wanted to make to our people was, we're going to close the store. We're going to retrain 100,000 people on making the perfect shot of espresso. And that was a galvanizing moment for the company and demonstrated to our customers, this is serious. We are going to significantly improve the quality of your beverage.
Well, hadn't your barristers already gone through a training course?
I think they did. But again, I think over the years...
Is it barista or barista?
Barista. I think over the years, perhaps the growth of the company had, in a sense, diluted that a bit. And I wanted to rewind the clock and go back to the core.
One complaint made by some customers is that your baristas have to make so many specialty drinks that the wait could be rather long.
The wait is generally 3 to 4 minutes. And, we get people through pretty quickly. But again, we're not McDonald's. We're not a fast food company. The wait is something because we are handcrafting your beverage and our customers realize that.
You say in the book that you did feel it was time to streamline the coffee making process. How did you go about that?
We completely rediagnosed everything we were doing behind the counter and created lean techniques in order to improve the processes that we were doing and at the end result, a better customer experience. At the end of the day, we wanted to put the customer in every meeting and every discussion we had and, in a sense, put our feet in the shoes of the customer and enhance their experience.
Well, when I go into a Starbucks, generally it's either to get just a regular cup of coffee or maybe a cappuccino, and the person in front of me is ordering something I don't even understand.
Well, what's happened over the years is there's approximately 80,000 different ways that a Starbucks customer can order a coffee beverage at Starbucks. And as a result of that, you might have been in front of somebody who was getting a customized beverage.
Not might have been. I'm always behind somebody who's getting a customized thing. Just when I'm realizing I'm a little late for work. The competition to Starbucks, as you point out in the book, comes from two principal directions, from below, McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts, and from the top, the local coffee houses. How can you compete between those two groups?
Well, I think for any business, the worst place you could be is in the middle. And then secondarily, you don't want competitors to define who you are. And I think for us, we had to redefine for the marketplace and our customers our leadership position. And so going back to all the things we've done, retraining our people, changing the way we do our work, and most importantly, committing ourselves to exceeding the expectation of our customers. And if our business today is better than it ever has been because these things have resulted in a better customer experience.
Well, a lot of people swear by Dunkin' Donuts coffee. Why would somebody want to spend so much more for Starbucks coffee?
Well, the truth is it's not that much more. You know, Dunkin' Donuts is a good company, but the fact is Starbucks is ethically sourcing and roasting the highest quality coffee in the world. We've done it for 40 years. I don't even know if Dunkin' Donuts and McDonald's roast their own coffee, but it's a different beverage.
But you roast your own coffee in Seattle?
We have roasting plants throughout the world, three in the U.S. And we are buying and roasting not only Arabica coffee, but the peak quality of coffee in the world.
Fair trade, organic?
We are the largest buyer of fair trade coffee in the world.
Really? Yeah. You do charge a little extra for it, but...
We do, and I think customers appreciate that. And in addition to the fact that we are involved with Product Red and doing lots of things for coffee farmers around the world, and this goes back to the book, which is it's not just about making money. It's about making money and giving back, and I think our customers recognize that.
Although you don't want to talk about profit margins in the book.
Well, we're a public company, so people can see that. We're not hiding anything, and you know, we're a profitable company, but also a company that I think has tried to do well by others.
How much of your business is selling coffee and the bean or ground?
We've got a very significant business of selling whole bean and ground coffee in the grocery store, and about 10-15% of our business in our stores is coffee by the pound.
Uh-huh. Although in the grocery stores, it's usually, I don't know what happened some years ago, Chock Full of Nuts changed the rules there, and what used to be a pound is now 13 ounces or something like that.
I don't know what they've done.
No, but okay. I mean, you're also selling in less than a pound.
And that's mainly driven by the grocers, to be honest with you.
Howard Schultz, his book written with the help of Joanne Gordon is called Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul. It is published by Rodale. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. My guest is Howard Schultz, who's chairman, president, and chief executive officer of Starbucks Coffee Company. He has just written a book called Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul, published by Joanne Gordon. Written with the help of Joanne Gordon, published by Rodale. And that subtitle suggests that you felt that the company was really fighting for its life?
I think if we go back 2 years, at the height of the recession and consumer confidence being so low and Starbucks being a discretionary purchase, what we saw was a significant drop in revenue and profit during that period. And I think in honesty, it wasn't just because of the recession. We had our own issues that we had to solve. And when I came back to the company, my first day in 2008, I stood in front of the entire company. And the first thing I said is, I want to apologize to you because I think as leaders, we have let you and your families down. And we're not going to look back. We're not going to blame anybody. But I promise you, we are going to restore the company back to its glory days.
And you said that in visiting some of the stores, you noticed that a lot of the technology was outdated.
I think that it wasn't only the technology. I just think that when a company has such ongoing success, in a way, invincibility and hubris sets in. And I think as a result of what we had experienced just doing so well for so long, we had lost our hunger, our ambition, and our core purpose.
Well, you also were now facing competition from a lot of other companies that looked a bit like yours.
There was competition, and if you go back 2 years, there was headlines all over that Starbucks' best days were over, the bloom is off the rose, McDonald's is going to kill Starbucks, the stock price was at an all-time low. And I think one thing that people didn't realize is companies are not made up of – it's not a stock price. It's sometimes it's not even the product. It's people. And Starbucks, more than any other consumer brand, is based on the behavior of people. We define the experience in our stores. And our people were galvanized by the opportunity, and they believed in what we were about to do. And they transformed the company back to its healthy.
Well, there's always a problem of overexpansion. Mm-hmm. And I can think of a lot of chains that had stores everywhere that don't even exist anymore. You closed a whole bunch of unprofitable outlets?
We did. I think many companies go through cyclical changes, and the growth of Starbucks, I think, was a little bit too aggressive. And when I did come back as a result of that and the recession, we did close hundreds of stores for the first time. And this was a
Where did they tend to be located?
Pardon me?
Where did they tend to be located?
They were all over America. But in many areas, they were where the subprime mortgage crisis existed, and people were just not living in those places.
You also had expanded into other countries. Is that profitable?
We've got a very profitable international business. We're in 55 countries, and we have a big business in China and doing very well.
Although the whole thing is inspired by Italian coffee, I don't think you're in Italy, are you?
We have not opened a store in Italy, but at some point...
Competition too tight? Too tough there?
It's a very tough market, but at some point I would hope that we would get there.
What about the layout of Starbucks outlets? The successful stores have long lines, and often that's not all that pleasant.
Well, I think the lines are a function of the fact that there's great demand for Starbucks, and that's why we open a store close by to kind of bring some pressure off that store. But the truth is the lines are not that long in terms of how long you wait. And by the time you get your beverage, it's made perfectly for you, and people come back because of the quality of the coffee. And Starbucks has created something in America that did not exist, and that is this third place between home and work and this sense of community.
Well, many New York coffee houses have to contend with people who take a table, plug in a computer, stay sometimes for a full work day while only buying an occasional cup of coffee. And you come in, you want to have a cup of coffee, and there's this person who's camped out for the day. Isn't that a problem at Starbucks?
Have you actually seen somebody camped out for the day?
Oh, yeah. People who are writing novels, I think.
Okay. I don't think we've ever asked anyone to actually leave the store because they've been on Wi-Fi too long. I think this is the evolution of our society. People are staying on their computer longer. We don't discourage that, but the fact is that Starbucks is a place that many people feel comfortable staying.
For a long time, you charged for Wi-Fi
no longer.
Starbucks. Yeah, now you offer it free. What led you to change that policy?
We charged for a couple of years, and then we developed our own digital network, and we felt this was an opportunity for us to enhance the experience. And again, the evolution of the significant change in consumer behavior, this is really good for us and good for the customer.
Well, one of the things, the ways that companies sustain profitability is that they expand what they offer. Now, you've expanded beyond coffee and food. You're selling CDs, coffee makers, mugs, coffee. Uh-huh. But you can't go much more past that, can you?
Well, I think there's other things that we're doing that really demonstrates the innovation of the company. And I write about this extensively in the book, is that a company today, no matter what business it's in, cannot embrace the status quo. You must push for self-renewal and reinvention. We invented a new category within instant coffee this year, which was Via, high-quality coffee. Starbucks customers can now pay on a mobile phone, and this has become a very important part of the Starbucks experience. We're significantly engaged in social and digital media as the number one brand on Facebook. These are all levels of innovation. So, we're going to continue to push the envelope and embrace the entrepreneurial DNA of the company.
Can you talk a bit more about using the social media? How does that work?
Well, I think there's such a seismic change in consumer behavior today where customers are getting access to information, sharing information, and there's also, I think, a real shift in traditional advertising and marketing. By us creating this capability and discipline within social media, we have a higher level of emotional engagement with our customers, reducing the cost of customer acquisition, reducing traditional marketing. And I think this is another area we've become very, very good at.
Have you had problems with troubled communities where the feeling was that keeping the store open would be good for the community at the same time?
You mean when we had to close the store?
Yeah.
Well, I think what's perverse is when we had to close stores in some of these communities because the business was so poor during the recession, there was such an outcry and such a high degree of passion where people wanted us to keep the store open, and the fact is we just couldn't. And perhaps in the future we'll go back to those neighborhoods.
What about all of those outlets in other places, in Barnes & Noble stores and airports? How can you maintain any control over quality for them?
The stores that you're talking about in airports and in Barnes & Noble and in grocery stores are licensed stores. And the standards and execution in those stores are the same as if they're company-owned. We want to be agnostic. And
so you train those
baristas?
We
train all those people. We have the same level of quality control, and those stores do extremely well.
You said that your image was not all that good for a while. What did you do to change it?
Well, I think the equity of the Starbucks brand was built from within first, and that was with our people who we call partners, based on the benefits we create in the culture and values. In addition to that, I think the number one characteristic of a consumer brand today that you have is trust. And I think over the last 2-3 years, we've worked very hard with great authenticity and transparency to communicate to our customers who we are, what we're doing, why we're doing it. And we're sitting today not only with record financial results, but also record qualitative scores on the issues about brand trust and the experience in our stores.
You ran ads on Saturday Night Live.
We ran one ad on Saturday Night Live.
But that was for your target audience?
The ad that we ran on Saturday Night Live was right before the election in which President Obama was elected. And what we did was we were concerned as a company that the poll said only 50% of Americans were going to vote. And we ran a campaign that said, if you vote tomorrow, we will give you a free cup of coffee at Starbucks. And yeah, you wouldn't believe what happened. It was incredible. We ran out of food that day.
Well, you were giving free cups of coffee, but you were charging for the food. But that,
yeah, right. But,
I mean, it wasn't a bad sales ploy, although you can't do that every day.
No, and it really was a very interesting exercise, but we did run that ad on Saturday Night Live.
Many companies upset by the new regulations about listing trans fats and things like that. And at the same time, there is a lot of concern and awareness about obesity. Mm-hmm. You announced that, in fact, was it just recently that you plan to introduce even more healthy options in your
yes.
stores?
We have worked with Mayor Bloomberg's office, and I think we were one of the first, or not maybe the first company, to embrace the policy of total transparency on the menu in our stores. We think that's a good thing. Customers should know exactly what's in their what they're eating and how many calories. And now we have another initiative that will unveil itself at some point in the future around healthy food and health and wellness alternatives at Starbucks.
Your default milk will be 2% now?
It is 2%. It is already. And that's been that way for about a year.
That means that unless I say I want whole milk in my cappuccino, you're going to give me 2%?
Yeah. That's worked out fine.
Uh-huh. Well, some people feel they can taste the difference.
Marginally, but okay.
And more recently, you've begun to allow customers to customize their Frappuccino blended drinks to take out the fat and calories. And
correct.
You also started selling downsized foods such as mini desserts.
The Frappuccino, we in view of the concern about calories, we created the opportunity for customers to customize Frappuccino. In fact, you can get a Frappuccino at Starbucks for less than 100 calories, and many people do. And now we've introduced very small bites called minis, again, to give customers the option to having something indulgent but something that is lower in calorie.
Well, you offer a lot of stuff, food and desserts and stuff, but you've said repeatedly you don't see Starbucks as a fast food restaurant. So what is it exactly?
It is it's not a fast food restaurant because we don't cook anything at Starbucks. There's no ovens or grills or anything like that. You know,
but you do heat up some sandwiches.
Yeah, we are a specialty coffee store. And above all else, want to create an experience for our customers that really does produce a sense of community in our stores.
And you say in the book that you don't want other food smells to eclipse the smell of freshly roasted coffee.
We are a coffee company, and I think anything we do around food has to be an adjacency and not dilute the integrity of coffee aroma.
So what did you do in the morning? Because there are these breakfast sandwiches, which I assume would have had, strong aromas on their own.
So the myth about these breakfast sandwiches are, first off, our customers love them. So we didn't want to remove them, but we took them out for a short period of time, reformatted them, so that the aroma after it was heated up would not in any way degrade the aroma of coffee. And everyone's a winner.
You have introduced a normal-sized coffee cup, which you don't push. I think it's called, a short?
Yes.
Why don't you let people know that that's there? I mean, sometimes I'll go in and ask for a short, and they'll look at me like I'm strange.
No.
You mean this one here?
Well, we have multiple sizes, as you know.
They seem to be getting bigger and bigger, not smaller. I mean, now you have Grande, and you have Grande Canyon, and
No. Most often, people order a typical drink is a tall latte at Starbucks, and we certainly have a wide range of sizes, including a short. The short was not on the menu because most people were not using it. We're not hiding anything. It's available if you want it. But the fact is that most people were ordering larger sizes.
There's a rumor that you're in discussion to buy Pete's Coffee. Is there any truth in that?
We don't comment on rumors.
What about T-Mobile? Are you going to buy T-Mobile?
I think they were just bought.
Well, we're not sure about that yet.
Okay.
But if you were to try to absorb a major company like that, do you think that you'd run into the same problems that AT&T is going to run into?
With antitrust issues of that nature?
Coffee is a different kind of business, isn't it?
We have not had, in the history of our company, acquisitions have not been a significant component of our growth. It's hard for me to answer that.
Howard Schultz has written with the help of Joanne Gordon, Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul. It's published by Rodale. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.